And and you're hosting this one, Dave?
I'm introducing it.
Yeah,
I'm you're the host. I'm co-hosting. You're the host. I'm co-hosting it.
Sounds fine.
Don't put all the pressure on me.
Don't argue with me until we get started.
I'll collapse like a wet noodle.
Speaking of sex robots,
that's my problem.
That happens in Japan a lot. The wet noodle.
They collapse like a wet tentacle.
Oh, I've seen.
I always thought like hentai should be about like bondage for chickens.
Hi, everyone. Feeling blue? Christmas got you down? Well, we're here to cure it. It's Sneaky Dragon. My name's David Dedrick.
We are the anti-Christmas show.
I didn't say that.
Yep.
Did I say I'm anti-Christmas?
We're the cure for Jesus, is
right
what Dave
now,
said.
Right now, I'm feeling against Christmas.
Take that to church on Sunday.
Take that. Take that, church. I'm personally feeling down on Christmas. I don't know how you're feeling, Ian.
I'm feeling, well, the snowpocalypse that hit yesterday kind of threw me off, where you couldn't walk down the street. It seemed like God was being upset. Listen, we have a guest here, Dave, and I think it's very rude that we're not... Dave,
I keep pressing on
playing Pong.
I keep pressing on your keyboard.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right, thank you.
I'll remember it's there.
All right, Dave, we have a guest.
Well, Ian, as you pointed out earlier, Christmas is a time for guests. And it's nice to have guests come over and share one of the armchairs by our nice fireplace that we have crackling away in the background.
Right.
And it's kind of loud now. You probably shouldn't have thrown that chair into it. And so this week joining us is actually returning guest. You're the first returning guest.
Yay!
You got to introduce him before he can talk, though.
Oh, sorry. You can't talk yet.
Oh.
I have to edit that
Jinx.
Out now. You've added work to my thing. To my editing. You've added work to... Anyway, it doesn't matter. Anyway,
get on with it!
Our guest this week is...
Christmas is coming!
Christmas is coming. Our guest this week is Patrick Soriel, who has a website, right, called Coming Attractions?
Absolutely right. That's correct. Yeah, it's called Coming Attractions. That's right.
All
right,
let me apologize, by the way, for Dave's intro.
No,
don't apologize.
There's a couple of things you should do in an intro. One, always end with the name. Build with
Is that right?
Here's the director of Star Wars, George Lucas. You don't go, here's George Lucas. He's done Star Wars. He's done Raiders. He's done Howard the Duck. Please welcome Patrick Soriel.
Can I just say that?
Oh, you interrupted me.
Can I just say that my ability to introduce is commensurate with the pay I get doing it.
All right.
That's all I want to say.
Okay. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. Thank you for having me, David. Thank you for having me in. I appreciate
it. No problem.
It's great to be back returning. It's fantastic.
Well, now, last time you were on the show, we talked about TV, movies, and what have you.
Yes, we did.
It's unusual. It's a real step out of our usual chess.
But especially now, Christmas time, there's a lot of big movies out. Now, obviously, all three of us have seen The Hobbit. Dave and I saw The Hobbit together last week. We asked you to see The Hobbit. So what did you think of The Hobbit that you saw? You fucking asshole. We asked you one thing. One goddamn thing. And it was to see The Hobbit.
I got sick. Warner Brothers. I mean, there's
you got sick of Warner Brothers.
You got sick of Warner Brothers.
I was sick. I was sick on top of that. But, you know, hey, whatever. But the thing is, I mean, I'm supposed to be in this press list, and Warner Brothers is supposed to invite me to these things in Vancouver. And what happens? They didn't send me an invite for The Hobbit, so I couldn't go see it, you know? And then I got sick, and I missed it. So I'd like to say I'm going to send a link to the Warner Brothers people in Vancouver and let them know that they missed this golden opportunity for me to talk about The Hobbit. So really all I have to say about this is just all that meaty insider information, all the troubles and the problems.
This we would like to hear, the gossip,
you know, the things that are happening between the people who are playing the dwarves and what they're really doing to make sure that they come back in movie two and movie three. Now that's going to surface and come out in this podcast where I could have just reviewed the movie. I could have easily just talked about cinematography and 48 frames per second. Is it, you know, neurotic? What's it like? But now I got to talk about what the hell Peter Jackson does when he wants to get his freak on.
Well, now, what I find surprising in what you were saying before was I couldn't see the movie because I was not invited. Mm-hmm. So apparently you see the movies the way that vampires are invited into homes.
Yeah,
absolutely. You must be invited into a movie theater.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you cannot go and purchase a ticket like a human man and buy some popcorn, sit down and watch the movie. You must be invited inside.
And you know what? It is true. I do want to address this because you have to realize that once you get invited, once you're on the press listing, a magical event happens. You get to go to movies and you don't have to sit in front of all those commercials for 20 minutes. It's just the movie. And the great part is you're on a list, so you get to walk in and there's no like fighting for seats. Not like those little, you know, tickets they give you in like first come, first serve and like that. There's like seats with pieces of paper on there that say press because you're not important enough to have a name. So it's just member of press. You get to sit there and it's like, wow. And you do that for a couple of years and it's like, this is what it must be like, you know, being a billionaire. You don't have to worry about money. Like, I'm used to this now. So the idea is like, oh, I got to go buy a ticket and then I got to go sit in front of this. And the last time I did that, I mean, it sounds like a snob, but the last time I did that was for Skyfall, which was like, you know, a month ago or something like that. So
and
I feel like I've done
tickets?
Enough.
You bought tickets for it?
I bought tickets for Skyfall.
Like a common man.
Like a common, to see what it was like, the experience. And you know what? It hasn't changed.
Yeah. So what you're saying
it's
is
pretty
you,
much
can't,
the same.
You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Once? No, you can't.
You know
I
what?
Think it's like nuclear weapons.
Let me just say this to that expression. Of course you can put the genie back in the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
One of two ways. One, go, genie, I wish you were back in the bottle.
Yeah.
Done. Or make your third fucking wish. Genie's back in the bottle. Done. Genie always goes back in the damn bottle. It's not hard to put the genie in the bottle.
Okay. I
you got to rub me the right way.
I did not think of that. Like, again, and the other option, well, the other reason too is I was really sick and I did nothing. So for on the weekend and like this week was a write-off too. So I am literally on my like second day of feeling okay.
I'm close to that myself. I had I got incredibly food poisoned in England, came back, got a crazy cold, knocked me the hell out. The whole family's been ugh. You know, everyone's got a thing with the eye and the stickiness and it's just ugh, it's been gross.
But the good thing is I'm prepared for this too because I knew I'm going into this. I haven't seen the movie. That's why I want to ask you guys some questions.
Okay,
we will trade you.
Here's what we'll do. We'll trade you. You ask us a question and then you will have to give us some gossip about the movie in return. This will be quid pro Gollum.
Absolutely.
Okay, and please ask them 40 frames a second.
Just 40 frames? Like 48?
I don't know how many fucking frames
right,
a second
okay.
is.
All right, all
whatever
right.
it takes to make the computer animation look bad.
All right. Okay, I think I can do that. I can handle that.
All right.
So, okay, there we go.
First question
from me?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you will then in return give us some gossip. So
I see how this is working.
So Hobbit question number one. Begin.
Okay, so I'm playing the Clarice Starling role, and you are the Hannibal Lecter. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? If this was Battlestar Galactica, we would never get out of that tube and shoot into space. We would all just be whipping through.
Dude, have had that problem, but wrong analogy. All right, cheap joke at my expense. Okay. First question, obviously, the big elephant in the room.
He is gay.
Peter is gay. Peter Jackson.
Ian McKellen is gay. And
Go ahead.
Oh, well, I knew that. He better be gay after what happened between me and him back when he was in town for X-Men. I'd like to know that that was real and not
meaningful.
Whatever, you know, like a college fling for him. Okay, first question. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson's filmed this movie in what is called 48 frames per second. So
yes.
It's double the normal speed of traditional movies.
It's not playing that way in all theaters though, is it?
That's not playing in all theaters like that. Well, question 1A, did you see the movie in 24 frames or 48 frames?
We watch regular frames. Good regular human frames. Not that 48. Yeah. So sorry.
Okay, fuck it, I'm gone.
But let me tell you, I know some people that did and said it makes the CGI look weird. Like the CGI, here's the thing. Sometimes the CGI looks weird and sometimes the CGI looks awesome, but then the people look weird. Like you can't have CGI and real at 48 frames a second apparently in the same frame and have it emerge well. Like individually, looks great. Together, woo, not so hot.
I've heard even individually it looks weird. I've heard one of the guys who's online, I read a lot of stuff about, told me it looks like watching one of those old British TV movies from the 1970s where it's like all the frame rate is sped up and so everything looks kind of strange. So everything looks looks artificial, like, you know, Gandalf's staff really looks fake and
mm-hmm.
the Hobbit homes look really weird too and stuff like that. And people are speaking and they're out of sync with what they're actually talking about. Now, I've read about three quarters of the reviews have mentioned it's odd, it's disjointing, or just downright, it just doesn't work. With one quarter saying, no big deal, doesn't matter at all. You know, it looks like an Xbox video game, which I don't know why they would say that it's a good thing as a movie, but whatever the case is, right? But it's really interesting because Hollywood's treating this as a litmus test, just like Avatar was a litmus test for 3D movies.
Yeah.
And Avatar came out and made $1 billion and was the biggest movie of all time. And so everybody said, well, we got to make everything 3D now. Doesn't matter what it is. You know, next Adam Sandler movie's got to be in 3D, you know? So if this comes out and makes a lot of money, you're going to see a lot of studios are going to say, you know what? Now the trail's been blazed. We're going to do movies at 48 frames per second. And it's a bad and good thing that there's so many 3D movies nowadays. There's things that are being made in 3D that have no purpose for 3D.
But the difference between the frame rate and the 3D, obviously, is the movie theaters like the 3D because they can add more money to it. Like, yes, you charge extra for the glasses. You're not going to have your, here's the glasses that make the 48 frames a second make sense. So there's no extra profit on bumping up the frame rate, is there? It's just an interesting gimmick. I don't think that's a get more people in the door situation, whereas 3D is enough of a gimmick that people might go, well, I want to see it in 3D. I can't see it in 3D on my TV later, so I'll see it in 3D now, you know.
Unless they want to bump up and say, okay, now I got to get the, you know, HD TV and 1080p and all that.
Will this mean that you need new Blu-ray players or anything when it goes?
Well, I'm just wondering if what end this is really supposed to be for. Is it for the home user or is it for the theater goer?
I think it's going to be for the theater goer. I don't know what it's going to be like. I don't know what a 48 frame display for The Hobbit's gonna be like on a home projection or a home television set.
Yeah,
it might look weird. It might look like, you know, as my friend said, one of those old British movies that, you know, are filmed on video, right?
Yeah.
When you go to the Sony store and you stand in front of, you know, they're always displaying, you know, Avengers right now, and you look at it, there's a different. It looks different. It looks like a video as opposed to an actual, you know, traditional movie that's filmed in 24 frames. So it's a little disjointment right there, and people say, hey, it takes a little bit of adjustment. Is there going to be an additional benefits? Are they going to upsell you on, like, you know, an extra dollar a ticket? I don't think so. I hope not. I don't think they're going
to
come up.
This seems to be what they're trying to do now. Like, I go to the movies and they're like, hey, would you like the reserve seats? And like, oh, reserve seats, that's not like a fine thing. Would you like the rumble seats?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, that sounds like that would make me have to poop. Like, I don't want to be like, you're eating the worst food in the world, right? I mean, they're still serving Burger King and the popcorn with the butter and the big thing of soda. You want to put that in a guy's gut and then take him for a shaky shake. That's just asking for a whole mess of trouble, isn't
it? See, that doesn't happen in the press screenings. It's wine and caviar. It's very different.
Wow. Yeah, no one gets nauseous on fish eggs. That's good stuff. Okay, now you got to tell us a bit of gossip.
So Dave
has something more to say.
Well, no, because I want to lead into what I want to hear in terms of juicy gossip. Which
good, please.
I notice in the film, like, there are elements that I would call Del Toro-esque, sort of particularly like the Goblin King in one section where he has this really grotesque goiter or something going on.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, that's, you know, and the way he looks, it looks really a Del Toro design.
Yeah. He looks like he came off the set of Hellboy 2.
Yeah, or something out of Pan's Labyrinth or something like that, where there's other elements, obviously, that are Peter Jackson or the people that who work for him, their particular designs. And there is a lot of carryover from Lord of the Rings. But what I'm curious about is why Del Toro left the film.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah, because I didn't know if you realized he was involved with it all along. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that actually is a little bit of gossip. Here we go. Into that too. For those that don't know, Guillermo del Toro, who directed the two Hellboy movies, Pan's Labyrinth. Devil's Backbone. Yeah.
Kronos.
Are we going to play this game?
Blade 2.
The remake of Little House on the Prairie? No.
He didn't direct. He just produced the remake of Don't Be Scared of the Dark.
Don't be afraid of the dark.
Yeah, the Little House on the Prairie. Which was called Half Pint because she only had a half pint of blood left in her after she'd been drained by her father.
It was a little intense.
That was a bit of a disappointment, that Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
And Nelly was an octopus.
Really? Yeah, that explains it, actually.
Okay, so, let me just, I'm sorry to sidebar, but that's what we do. So the guy with the goiter on his face, is he the same character as David Bowie in Labyrinth?
Yes.
Are they both the Goblin King?
Yes. Yeah.
They are the same character.
Mm-hmm. I actually haven't seen Labyrinth.
For the love of fuck!
And you know what?
I know. Let me just say, Patrick, I invite you to watch it on DVD.
I just want to point out that his website is called Coming Attractions. Once it's in the theater, it is no longer of any interest to Patrick. He only is interested in its arrival.
I want to hear this gossip, but let me just say this to you. Tonight, I am lending you goddamn Labyrinth, and you are taking it home, and you're not eating Christmas dinner. You are watching the damn movie. You've got kids. You've got to watch every Muppet movie. That is the damn rule.
Absolutely. There are probably two or three listeners out there who will understand when I say the following words, is that once you've seen, if you pick one Jennifer Connelly movie to watch, it's career opportunities, and you can't ever go anywhere else from that moment right there when she's riding the horse.
I have not seen it.
Let me just.
You haven't seen Career Opportunities?
But you're making
me
interested. Well, yes, sir, in The Rocketeer. That to me feels like once you've seen The Rocketeer, you don't need to see it.
Guys, you are both incorrect. There are two movies. There's one called Some Girls, which you should see. That's very sexy. Mm-hmm. And there's another one that was directed by Dennis Hopper. I think it's called The Hot Zone or the
Hot. Yeah.
Let's all just take a moment and look online.
I've seen it.
Those pictures. I've watched that. Jennifer Connelly. But anyway, back to the gossip about Del Toro. Yeah. Continue. I'm writing a note to myself saying, "Lend you Labyrinth."
All right. Okay.
Watch The Hot Zone on the internet.
I do own The Dark Crystal. So, I mean, I think that's a superior, whatever. Okay. So Del Toro, he's working on The Hobbit for 3 years.
Yes.
You know, and
not directing anything.
Well, he's not directing anything. Yeah. And Del Toro is a guy, like, when he works on a project, he buys notebooks and just does sketches and notes. I mean, like, literally, he'll have like 10 books of sketches. And I've seen these notebooks in real life. Wow. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure the stuff he's got for The Hobbit is just amazing. And he lives in the world. The thing is, as this movie's trying to coil us together, and, you know, the people who own the rights say, well, look, you know, Lord of the Rings made $1 billion. It won, you know, Best Picture. Really like to make some more here. So finally they say, okay, let's do the Hobbit movies. Del Toro gets on board because Jackson doesn't want to be on board anymore now. He's a serious director. He's gone off and done The Lovely Bones and all that.
I think you meant ruined The Lovely Bones, but anyway.
Yeah. But, you know, he's off doing that in 2007, 2008. And Del Toro, you know, he's put in his dues. He's done some great movies. This is the one that the mainstream is going to pay attention to him.
This is a cash-in.
Yep. And MGM goes bankrupt. They don't have the money to make any more James Bond movies, any more Hobbit movies, anything else. They run out of money.
It's criminal.
And so he's stuck in limbo with this project. And Del Toro, if you follow his career a bit, like, you know, the business nerds like me, business film nerds do, he's attached to 10, 12 different projects. His brain is moving so fast.
Yeah.
And he realizes, you know, this is bad for me creatively and this is bad for me business-wise because I don't know how long this is going to be in limbo.
Yeah.
And there didn't look like there was a light in the tunnel there at all.
Okay.
So what happened is that he had to make the decision to leave. And shortly thereafter, it was announced he was on a project called Pacific Rim, which is a big, the trailer just came out. It's like, it's essentially, you know, what happens when Gundam meets Godzilla. That's what it is, an American version.
That's the new movie he's done?
Pacific Rim, yeah.
And
I thought it was robots. That one called Mother or something like that.
No. That's his movie, Pacific Rim. It's coming out. But see, the company behind that, and again, this is, you know, film business nerd stuff, is Legendary Pictures. And they're flush with cash because they've made the last three Batman movies. They are doing the Superman 300. They're making a lot of money for Warner Brothers doing this. So they said, okay, look, you, Warner Brothers says, we got to make a tentpole action film. This is going to come out summer 2013. Come on board. He says yes, goes off, does it, right? As that's happening, Jackson has to sort of step and go, okay, look, it's not the end of the world. I'm sort of the father of this project. Yeah. You know, we'll get it going. MGM gets two guys who come on board, who developed the Sixth Sense movies and all that, really well-known producers, Roger Birnbaum. And they come over, get involved with MGM, make a commitment, money comes in, things start picking up, and The Hobbit gets back on track. But
would you say that, would that have happened if Del Toro had stayed on the project? Or was it Jackson's name attached to it that gave that extra kick?
It would have happened with Del Toro. It's just that it didn't look like things were going to happen. Often that happens in Hollywood where, you know, people talk about making an alien movie and 10, 15 years go by and then all of a sudden, you know, the right event happens and the hot actress says yes and then it gets $1 million and it goes ahead, right?
Then we get Aliens versus Predator 2 and we're all blessed for it.
Absolutely.
Would Del Toro have been working from a script by Boyens and Jackson
and him.
Walsh?
It's him.
And him.
He's credited on the film too.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would have worked from, you mean did Jackson work or did Del Toro?
Del Toro, would he have been working from a Jackson script by the same group who wrote Lord of the Rings or worked on Lord of the Rings?
I believe that Boyens and Walsh were involved with the script and the story development and he was involved too. Then when he left, Jackson got involved then too and I'm sure he was involved in some kind of capacity, but officially now his name's on it too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm glad to hear that his thumbprints, his visual thumbprints are on the movie.
Yeah, not a huge amount. Like, I'm curious to see it carry on. Like, you know, he must have had ideas for other later characters, you know.
Yeah, you're going to see in the next, I'm sure, Smog, which, I mean, I don't think it's in the first movie, right? The dragon.
You barely see it. It's mostly flames.
A little bit, yeah.
It's like Gollum in the first movie, right?
It's like seeing Nipple in James Bond opening sequences. Right. It's like you think you see it. You know, if you remember back, you're like, I'm pretty sure I did, but you don't.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'm
well,
sure.
The girls behind us cheered at Benedict Cumberbatch's name coming up on the screen as if they had actually heard his voice.
But he, he may have made a sound. He may have grunted.
He may have, yeah. He may have gone rawr.
Okay, so okay. Guys, okay. That was good give and take. Mm-hmm. That was good ask a question. That was good gossip.
Okay.
Do you have a second question for us regarding The Hobbit?
Yeah, okay, I do. Now, the bookends of the movie where it's set with Frodo and Ian mm-hmm. Holm and mm-hmm. the older Bilbo.
That's right.
It's at the beginning and at the end of the movie.
Yes. And oddly enough, Batman. I don't know why they did that, because... but Batman is sitting around and no one ever brings him up, but he's just there. And I assume this is where he went after the last Batman movie.
Well, yeah, of course Batman's in this because Batman makes a lot of money. I yeah. mean, that's the it's reason why Batman's yeah. in this movie.
He's picking his teeth with a batarang. He's just hanging around.
To answer slightly more seriously, this is the exact problem with having Jackson work on it. It's not enough to have 17 endings to a film. Now he has to have 14 beginnings to a film.
Right.
You know, and
right.
so now we have a movie that has the framing of the Smaug's attack on Erador, which is not in the book. It's just, you know, we just know what's happened.
Right.
We have that as a framing sequence. Then we have another framing sequence, which is Bilbo and Frodo on the day of the party. So it takes place exactly on the day of the party. So it basically what they've done with The Hobbit is they're it's not a standalone film. It's basically being made into a prologue for Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're incorporating the appearances of Sauron in Middle Earth, 400 years after his supposed destruction. So they're incorporating that into the film to make it more into a true prologue to Lord of the Rings. Because The Hobbit, if he'd never written another book, The Hobbit would have been a perfectly fine standalone children's story. So, you know, they're the ones who are bringing in this extra material.
Now, could I just ask,
from Silmarillion or Unfinished Tales or the appendix?
You've read the books, David.
Oh, of
now,
course,
have you read the books?
No, I have not.
There we go. So we got two not readers versus readers. So you're mm-hmm. but you're coming at it, I think, as someone who's read the books.
Oh yeah.
And are like, come on. What are you doing?
That's not so much.
Book.
I mean,
come on, you padding McPaddington.
There were things that I enjoyed in it that weren't in the book.
Sylvester McCoy.
One thing, yeah, no.
The love scene.
One thing that I.
Batman.
One thing that I liked. One thing I liked about this film that they didn't include in Lord of the Rings is the songs, like having actual singing in the film, which you know it's full of in Lord of the Rings. It's full of songs,
but not the same way with the books. Where it's like literally 20 pages with them singing a song going somewhere.
You know, next time you read it, you're so happy because you could just skip all the songs which you slavishly read the first time through. You know?
Right.
But
though the Bilbo doesn't like that song. That was in the Rankin Bass version.
The Misty Mountain song?
Yeah, the one where it's like, not Misty Mountain, no. It's the one, that's what Bilbo doesn't like. He doesn't like when we shit in his toilet. Doesn't like when we punch him in the nuts. He doesn't like this and he doesn't like that. That song, that's in that one. Just because I looked at a clip of that online, I was like, oh, that song's in that as well.
Oh, I love the Rankin Bass, The Hobbit. Like, I would like to see that again because I loved it as a child and because I'd read the book and I really enjoyed it.
The internet is your friend.
I really enjoyed their adaptation of it. So it would be interesting to compare the two because obviously when I heard, and this, you know, regular listeners will know that last week I swore up and down that I would not go to see The Hobbit because they had taken this 190-page novel and turned it into a three-part series of films.
But like a bad 70s sitcom, I'm not going. I don't know why I'm here.
An hour later, it was quite a, hey, you know, The Hobbit starts at 10 o'clock. We could maybe go. There I am in line. That's amazing. But
more popcorn, please.
Yeah, I think I've kind of gone off
Well, let me steer you back. So, okay. Are you saying that you're a purist and you wish they did this as a standalone, like one movie?
No, it's not that. I don't object to it. It's just that's what they've done. It's what, you know, just what I'm saying. Like, you know, the purpose of the framing device is to make it part of this.
Lord of the Rings merchandise thing, but it's the movie version.
Like there was the girls who were screaming for Cumberbatch also screamed when you saw Elijah Wood show up. It was like, "Wah!" And they're like, okay, all right, this if you're going for this audience, bang on, you got it, boom, they're ready.
One of them went, his eyes are so big.
Honestly, I know in some IMAXs they're showing the Star Trek clips, like big long Star Trek clip.
Yeah, yeah.
If they had showed a big clip of Benedict Cumberbatch, those girls would just melted in their seats.
They would have just run
under our feet and just into a drain. That would have been the end of it. Yeah. They were so Cumberbatch ready.
Yes,
I could go off on a tangent about that. I won't do that.
That's up to you.
Well, no, here, but this is, I think you've hit the nail on the head, Ian, though, is that...
Oh, me. Thanks. Dave talked for about 20 minutes. I talked for 2 minutes. Well, no. And I hit the nail on the head.
He brings up a really good point, which is...
Oh, Dave made a good point?
Yeah.
Fair
this
enough.
This is the thing. This is the delicate zone that the people who make film have to walk in, is that you have people who love something. Obviously,
you have a beloved,
Jackson loves
you have a beloved
this.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but Jackson loves this mm-hmm. too, but he's a filmmaker. And I've never read Lord of the Rings. I couldn't get into it, but I looked forward to the movies because I was saying, I know all this stuff about all these movies, and I analyze, and I know this what's happening with this novel, and they're turning it into a movie, and so on and so forth, and I can analyze it leading up to it. But with Lord of the Rings, it was great because I said, I don't have a preconceived notion about this. I'm walking in blind. It's going to be fun and awesome and great. And I even tried to avoid spoilers a bit on that. And I said to people, I just don't want to look at it. I just want to have this one moment to see what it's like.
Yeah.
And I did like it. But I learned, you know, slowly about all these things that went on, like such as the long songs they do on the journey. You know, the major character of, what's his name?
Tom Bombadil.
Tom Bombadil, you know, and how he's like almost like godlike in mm-hmm. some aspects. The Lord of
and would have been really, I can... Okay, being familiar with the books, I can see why they left him out, because essentially he's like this super powerful yokel character. It'd be like having a hillbilly that's God.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's the problem with Tom Bombadil. He's just kind of this like door to door, you know, he'd have that kind of, you know, southern.
So little Abner as Thor.
But what's great in the books is that he takes the ring from Frodo. Like, doesn't, you know, he just asks to see it, and Frodo gives it to him because at this point the ring hasn't infected everyone.
Yeah.
But he can hold it. And it has no effect on him, unlike everyone else who ever comes in contact, whether it's Gandalf, whether it's Galadriel.
Is that because he's a pure soul?
Because, yeah, he's so powerful.
Or too dumb to know. No, it's more power
than
him.
He's like godlike.
He's so powerful because he's nature.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's like yeah, that's true. That's an embodiment of the planet.
Well, in this mm-hmm. one, like one of my favorite characters. So go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, so, you know, the obvious question is why can't he keep it then?
And that's why can't he put Tom in there?
No, why can't Tom just take the ring from Frodo and keep it, say, from Sauron? And Gandalf says, well, because it's meaningless to him, so he'll just lose it.
Mm.
And it'll show up again. Like, we have to get rid of it entirely, right? But my one issue with the beginning of it, In the book, their beginning of their journey is a complete shambles, which you don't really get a sense in the film of it being like this one bad decision after another that, you know, by the time they get to, what's the name of the town that they have to get to?
In Lord of the Rings or
Yeah, Lord of the Rings, yeah.
The first one is like,
I can't remember now either.
Wally.
Wally, that's right. By the time you get there, you're just like, oh, thank God, they actually made it, you know.
Yeah.
Like meeting Aragorn is like, that's like, you know, that's like a relief to you as a reader, because you're like, finally, someone who can help these poor bumbling idiots right. find their way to this place. Where you don't get a real sense of that in the film. They're almost too competent in the film. And I would say the same thing about The Hobbit. One of the problems with The Hobbit compared to the book, in the book, the dwarfs are almost figures for us to pity in a way. And they're figures of fun, but they're really greedy. Like, the reason they want to get gold is because it's gold, and they really want gold. And so every decision they make is because they're greedy and avaricious, and they make all these bad decisions based on the fact that they're greedy and avaricious. Well, you can't have those kind of characters in a film, though, because they just become a wall to you. There's no way you're going to connect with those characters, so you have to make them these honorable warriors who are fighting for their homeland to regain their honor, da-da-da-da, right?
Else, yeah.
So you take that element of the book, which is really fun and silly. So you have elements that are in the character, but you can't have the whole movie like that, right? So it's a really, and I know why they changed it, just like I say, because it's a film, you have to connect the characters
it's an
in a different way.
Right? It's a commercial adaptation. Mm-hmm. These guys have love for it, but they have to walk that line. And I notice with myself too, as I've grown up, I mean, I was always a movie buff and I was into novels and all that stuff. And I've seen how there's a change happening right now with our pop culture, with our mythology, is that you're seeing these elements of fandom that, you know, people would say, oh, look, you know, they can't recast Captain Kirk. There's never going to be another Captain Kirk. Or this is the way people view Batman. Batman is tainted by the 60s TV show and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But there was, you know, the Tim Burton Batman comes out, redefined Batman. Now there's a new version of Captain Kirk out there. But the window of the buffer between, you know, you need the old generation to sort of forget about it and the new generation is becoming smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at what's happening with the Spider-Man movies now. Like, it's just, you know, they now they have 10 years between the 2002 Spider-Man and the 2012 Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And it's just a reset, right?
Well, I think the Hulk helped with that a bit, you know, that we just kept going through Hulks. So it's just like, fuck, okay, it's a new guy.
Yeah,
that's fine. Yeah, we're all right with that. that.
But there's good sides and bad sides. I mean, the good side is that it's an interpretation. And in another 20 years, someone's going to come, 20 years, who knows, like 50 years, someone's going to come along and they're going to do a Lord of the Rings and Tom Bombadil is going to be in it. It's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
And there's going to be good things and bad things about it. And it might even supersede Peter Jackson's version, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, with movies, there's so many things at play and who knows if it's going to be good or bad. But the door is there. And it could happen with anything else in the Tolkien universe that could come along and they could do, you know, 10 years down the road, they'll do The Children of Húrin or whatever, that book that just came out a little while ago. Or they could do a sequel that takes place after The Lord of the Rings. People just want more.
Well, what I'm looking forward to is the three-movie version of Farmer Giles of Ham. That's the... It's like a 90-page book. They can really stretch it out over
yeah,
the accordion.
I think one of the problems that the movie has, just as its most basic, it's the same problem the Star Wars prequels have, is that it's too loving to the films that have already come beforehand. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like, when I watched the opening of this, it was just like, we get it. You loved Lord of the Rings. We get it. It's the same problem with Superman Returns. We get it. You love Christopher Reeve. Now, where are we going from here? Okay, you're doing that again. That's a tribute. Yeah, I get that. You went to that before. We got it. We saw it. What's new, fucker? What's new? Come on, move ahead. You just can't, you're like, it's like, you know, you with your brothers. You go to high school. You're a big shot. Your brother comes along. You can't get out of your shadow. And this movie just feels like you can't get out of the shadow of Lord of the Rings. So it's always that.
But what happens if people now expect to see Lord of the Rings? Because, you know, there was such a well-received three movies, yeah. They want to see something that says, oh, okay, I get that. And the thing is, we're in the minority. The people, like, we have an awareness. We're talking all these things with the minutiae. We understand this. And the audience who listens to us understand that. But we are the minority. The majority are the people like, hey, it's Frodo, awesome. Or Benedict Cumberbatch is the flavor of the month. I want to sleep with him. Woohoo, he's there. that's 90% of the audience. And these guys are in business to make money. These are what movies do. And they are at that critical junction. And if you are Peter Jackson, you got to figure out how much can I walk in one world? How much can I walk in the other world?
But it feels like it's diminishing returns. You know, again, like, you know, the Star Wars prequels all made a lot of money, you know, but none of them were their own thing, you know?
I
think that's
But The Hobbit isn't its own thing. I mean, it's intimately connected to Lord of the Rings.
But it should have its own flavor. And like, what it felt like is it synced up with the exact flavor that we had with Lord of the Rings, and there's two problems with that. One, it's not the same type of movie because it's a more lighthearted fairy tale, goofier. Like, you know, the joke I was making was like, oh, it starts off, it's Snow White. It's Snow White. They're actually singing while washing fucking dishes. All they need now is for a robin to come in, sing, and talk to the robin. Next scene, a guy's talking to a robin. It's Snow goddamn White. You know, this wouldn't happen in Lord of the Rings. And the scenes that I thought worked the best were the ones, you know, like with Sylvester McCoy, you know, where, you know, which weren't from The Hobbit. Well, you're wrong. because when I saw the Sylvester McCoy stuff, I went like, oh, this is its own movie. It's making its own ground. It's setting its own tone.
It's expanding the universe?
Well, it's not even expanding. Like, it feels like it's its own flavor. Okay. It's not... It's like when you see...
The flavor was called Cheech and Chong.
No, incorrect. It's like when you see a stand-up comic, and you've seen all these other stand-up comics who are doing Seinfeld style, and then someone comes on, a Louis C.K. comes on, and you're like, oh! Okay. Obviously, they're based in the old thing, but they're doing the new thing. And that was the first part in the movie where I went, this feels fresh, new, and doesn't feel like another tip of the hat. Hey, we all enjoyed Lord of the Rings, right, fellers? You know, it was just like, well, this is its own weird ass shit, and it's pandering and weird, and there's a hedgehog, and you're feeling bad for the hedgehog. But it worked for me. Like, that was the first part that it all felt fresh.
Okay.
And David feels differently because he went to the bathroom to pee.
It's not so much. Yeah, no, it's not so much that. I actually like that part.
And it's not in the book, apparently.
No, it's not.
Yeah, that's I turned to P and went, that was my favorite part, and she went, it's not in the book.
I don't object.
Well, there you go.
I don't object to those things. I don't object to Galadriel appearing or Saruman coming in. Those are,
you're just making up names at
those
this
are
point.
Things that, like,
Sisyphus.
They're obviously just callbacks to Lord of the Rings and stuff. You know, I don't object to those kind of changes at all. My problem with the Radagast, whatever his name is.
It's Radagast, yeah.
The brown is that it's
hey,
a attempt.
Hey, let's not be racist.
It's an attempt to make a kind of a comic character, and yet it's not very funny. So if you're
he's
gonna
like
put
a goofy wizard,
if you're going to put a comic character into a film, make him funny. Don't make him go, Dave's not here. You know, like I enjoyed the first scene of him. It's just when he comes later on and he's really overplaying this scene, and it's just kind of.
Well, Gimli was like that in the Lord of the Rings movies. He was the comic relief.
But played more straight than this. This is really over the top. And also just the whole having bird poop down the side of his face was a little disturbing.
Is there anyone in the movie that's a straight man? Because there's a lot of straight people in Lord of the Rings that you can play the comedy people off of. Mm-hmm. And it seems here Gandalf is a Weisenheimer. You know, the dwarves are comedy relief. Bilbo's not
all of them.
Well, they're pretty, you know, Fatty Von Faddington likes catching things in his mouth. And his chair broke and he fell on his bum because he's fat. Because he's a fatso. Yeah. Fatty fat fell on his fat fucking bum.
That pisses me off too. And then
Bilbo is, I tell you what, well, I've never been before. And so it's like, not until you get to Elfland do you get anyone that's playing it straight. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas in Lord of the Rings, the stakes are like, shit is over serious, man. We are melodramatic as fuck.
Different books, though, and different tone.
Understood. Different tone. But just as a movie, it's a tough one. Everyone's the Weisenheimer. Yeah. It's the Avengers problem. Everyone's a wisecracker. So we really got to have some stuff happen to ground it. It's tricky.
It is tricky, and I don't think the movie's a failure. Nope. As someone who went in with very low expectations, I actually enjoyed
it. Dave screamed, "I'm not expecting much!" when the lights went down.
My problem is the film.
That would be great to hear.
And I didn't. Whoops! Damn it! Stupid keyboard thing.
Dave likes his drum solos.
my one issue with the film is it ends. And they can see the Lonely Mountain, or whatever it's called, where Smaug is curled up with his gold. They can see it.
Okay.
The movie ends. And you're like, they can see it? And yet it's two more movies to get there? This seems ridiculous.
That's the way the end of the first movie, though, wasn't it? Like it was like the distant dark land of Mordor was over there.
Yeah, they'll be getting there soon.
I guess.
You know?
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, I didn't know how Lord of the Rings went, so when I realized they weren't getting to the mountain in the first movie, that pissed me off. It's like, fuck off.
That's what my wife said too.
Of the three movies, I liked The Fellowship of the Ring the most. I thought The Two Towers was it was okay, and Return of the King is way too long. It is way the Ben Hur of. It's like seriously, I didn't even see.
What's
the
weird is they move like the Shelob's, the spider section actually is at the end of Two Towers.
Yeah, and they moved it into the third.
They moved it into the third film.
I remember them talking about that. Yeah,
because they felt that film didn't have enough going on in it.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Like that film is just packed full of stuff. Like it.
I think they didn't have enough in terms of the giant creature. Because in the first movie, it was all about the cave troll. Mm. That was, I mean, there's battles and stuff like that, but that is the monster, right?
Yeah.
And in the second movie, what the hell's in the second movie? There's got to be a giant monster that stands up.
Well,
there.
It's the wizard versus Gandalf.
Gandalf falling through the flames.
It's the Ents. It's the trees. Yeah, okay. They're the creature.
No, because the first one he falls, and the second one he comes back as white.
It opens. No, no.
Second one he falls?
No, the
It opens with him.
Falls.
It opens with him falling.
That's
still,
right. Yeah,
which is kind of disappointing because one of my favorite scenes in the Lord of the Rings, the book, is the second book opens with Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli kind of realizing everyone's been the hobbits have been kidnapped, and they're like, okay, we got to get these guys. Let's go, and they just start running after them, and it's just a great beginning because it's just kind of like, you know, you've gone through all this stuff in Fellowship of the Ring. And you have the whole Boromir and that whole dramatic sequence, and then that book ends, and you pick up the next book, which, by the way, Lord of the Rings is actually written as one long book.
Yeah,
it was divided into three books by the publisher. So you get to that next section, and it just opens with them just running, and you're just like, "Wow, this is great! Just running through a field, exciting!" And it feels so like, you know, that movie starts with this fall through, which once again I can understand because you're doing something different with a film than you are with a book, and you know, with a movie, it's a year later. So you need to kind of recap what happened at the end of the last one.
But look, you even make a good point. The publisher had to say, this is going to be three books, not one book.
Yeah.
I mean, at the very beginning of Lord of the Rings, there was commercial decisions being made about a work of art.
It was published during World War II, so there's paper shortages.
Oh, okay.
So that's why it was broken. Yeah, that's why it was broken up into three parts.
And Sauron was Hitler in some of the editions.
Yes. Yeah. Sauron is often mentioned to have a mustache.
Yeah, it was Lord of the Reich. It was
if you find one.
Yeah. You know what? Can I just say a marketing idea that I had that I want to run by you guys?
Sure.
Because you're a businessman, Patrick.
I'm a,
you got a lot of you got a lot of loose money to invest. Let me run this by you.
That's right. That's
okay, you know that Iosauron they got, the big flaming Iosauron on top of the thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you get one of those for Christmas. But instead of the Yule log, you put the Eye of Sauron, and it just burns continuously, and you have that on your TV,
that's
and
your
you
channel.
Relax. That's for your nerds who want that burning like on the TV, and it's like relaxing. You open your presents.
Again, it's all about, will you make the money from it from the small segment of population that will say, damn it, I'm going to buy that. You have to sell it for $900, but...
That's how I make my living, brother.
I know.
From that small section.
That's why I'm not making my living from being creative. I'm working for a marketing
I understand.
Company,
let me just see if the tickets are sold out for San Diego Comic-Con yet. What the fuck? Yeah, apparently that small section just is lining up now.
I know, but it comes into play. I've heard it before from the people that make these things.
Well, we just went shopping. Sorry to tangent, but we just went shopping. Your kids aren't going to listen to this. We went shopping for some things downstairs.
Yes.
And if you want to talk tangent items of, you know, it's just there's a, you know, of like any anything like Lord of the Rings, the incredible amount of merchandise is ridiculous, bobbleheads and this, that, and the other. Like, mm-hmm. How can this all make money? And yet, yes, indeed, this tiny percentage of the population, you know, when they want something, they want it badly, and they just want it. Nom 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 nom.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, it's like, well, 10 years ago, who was buying Doctor Who things? Nobody.
Yeah.
And now
me.
They're buying it more than ever before. I think if you wrapped up every dollar that Doctor Who made in the, you know, preceding 25 years and then compared it to the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, though. 10 years ago, how many of us had a full Doctor Who scarf?
I did.
So 2/3 of us.
I knew people.
More than that.
To be fair, it was made by the same person.
That would have been 1983.
Knitting
scarves.
Doctor Who scarves.
Yeah, but that's not a fair question because that wasn't my doctor. I was the John Pertwee guy. That was my doctor. That's
really? I watched John Pertwee, but it didn't grab me.
I was a kid when I watched it. It was on CKVU 13, remember?
Yeah,
like
Saturday morning.
That's when Tom
Baker came out. He didn't go in the TARDIS. He was always driving around in Betsy.
I know, and I thought that was cool.
Oh,
I
really?
Thought it was cool. He was on Earth.
Well, if you don't know that he could travel in space and through time,
but no, that's
then
what I mean.
This is cool.
It didn't grab me. It wasn't until I saw the TARDIS and they opened it up and it was bigger on the inside than on the outside that my mind was blown. And that changed my whole view of the show. And that was actually the Telons of Wung Fang or whatever it's called, Tom Baker one with Leela, which I saw on a Boxing Day night. You know, so it was post-Christmas, that kind of rosy glow. You're already nostalgic, even though you haven't, Christmas isn't over yet, but you're already in that.
Tell us about your first time, David.
Yeah, you know, that warm feeling of nostalgia. Same thing happened with James Bond with,
your first
Diamonds
James
Forever.
Bond. Yeah.
Even though I'd seen it when I was younger, because I had a friend whose mom loved Sean Connery, and I'd seen Thunderball, but I found it really boring as a kid. I was a bit older, Christmas time again, and I watched Diamonds Are Forever. And, it, you know, from then on, I was like a big James Bond fan.
Yeah.
And then did you like it when they remade it as Never Say Never Again?
I didn't actually recognize it. They remade Thunderball as Never Say Never Again.
That's what I said, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thunderball is okay. It's not the greatest story.
Yeah, okay.
It's strange, though. It is weird. I mean, this is what gets back to the whole idea of fandom and, like, you know, what's going to look like 40 years, 50 years down the road when you have, like, you know, four different Star Trek casts that have come and gone, and like, you know, better movie, one movie from one era is better than another one from the other era. Or there's been, like, you know, now look what's happening with Star Wars. They're gearing up to do Star Wars movies every 2 to 3 years. They're not just going to do the next trilogy. They're going to do Star Wars movies after that too, and it's going to continue on and on and on and on.
Yep.
So this whole idea of all these franchises and fandom and what it's going to look like 50 years down the road, 100 years down the road, and looking back, people are going to have their, you know, like I said, with Doctor Who, with me.
Yeah.
I don't think of the Doctor as a guy in the TARDIS. I think of him as John Pertwee, and he had this thing that was never in the TARDIS. It was just this thing that never worked, but all this badass stuff happened to him and the guys from UNIT.
Yeah.
You know? So it's, I think that's happening with The Hobbit to some extent too. Or it could happen with The Hobbit to some extent. People are going to look at this and say, this is their version, just like they look at it with the Star Wars prequels and say, oh, I like that. And then you hit those people.
Now, just a bigger question, when you're talking about fandom, what the future of fandom would be. When we were fans of stuff back in the day, say you were a Doctor Who fan, you would have to hunt out Doctor Who magazines or something, or someone talking about Doctor Who. It'd be hard to find another person who liked it.
You will do what I did, which was buy 10 international reply coupons
yes.
and send them to different Doctor Who fan clubs
yes.
and hear nothing back.
There you go.
You're like, what? They're all out of
business?
You'll
get them in time. Yeah. But would it be possible? Like, is the idea of that upset? Like, you had to actually do the work, right? You had to obsess over something to learn about the thing that you love.
I have the personality to do that.
That's great. But nowadays, if you say, Blake 7, that looks interesting. You know, you can go online and see generally on Wikipedia what's this all about.
Oh, I know. Well,
you can find. There's no
on YouTube and watch it.
There's no digging. So my question is: the fandom of the future, will it involve obsession? Because obsession to me is like, speaking of the Hobbit, it's a little bit of Gollum. You want the thing, you want it, but it's available. Like, there's anything that you want is available online right now. Yeah. If you feel thievish, you could download almost anything illegally that you want. So, like, is that kind of fandom even going to exist? Or are fans of the future going to have a much broader
scope? It's already different, though, because what people do now... What people do now is they immerse themselves in their fandom. Like, when we were looking for stuff, like, for me personally, once you find everything that you can find about, say, Blake 7, you finally get to see the shows. They finally show them on Channel 12, and you watch the whole series from beginning to end.
With commercials.
When you reach that point, you're done. You're like, okay, that obsession's over. I'll move on to something else. What people do now, though, like, because when we grew up, you watched the show once. And you never saw it again unless it happened to be rerun in the summertime or it went into syndication. You'd never see, like, Bionic Man.
Yeah.
I watched those shows faithfully as a child. I've never seen those shows ever again.
Mm-hmm.
I remember them slightly, but I've never seen them again. I love them as a child. My daughters can quote whole movies because they've watched films. They've watched, My Neighbor Totoro over and over again, or Kiki's Delivery Service. They wore out the DVD of that film, which is impossible, but they did it. But, you know, so, and now they have Tumblr. And they just, and it's full of GIFs, and it's full of quotes, and it's full
and
of
memes and things like that.
And pictures. And so they just become this whole
that started re-blogging. About 10 years younger than us, because my sister is 10 years younger than me, and she came in just as the VCR era was in.
Okay.
And so she would wear out Annie.
Yeah.
You know, she'd wear it out till you couldn't watch it anymore. And I think there's a natural thing definitely in little kids where repetition is how they learn, and repetition is comfort. But, so if you have something you love, you'll watch it to death.
Mm-hmm.
We did not.
But we didn't, because we didn't have that. We didn't have a culture that was part of, right?
So you would read a book over and over again.
Maybe.
Or you would listen to a song over and over again.
We'd listen to a song over and over again because it's compact. It's highly unlikely that many people read books over and over again. You might have a favorite book that you read over and over again. But kids nowadays, they're used to seeing things over and over. And they're, you know, so now Tumblr is this kind of repetitive reblogging, you know, tons of pictures of Benedict Cumberbatch, tons of pictures of Tom Huddleston or whatever his name is, you know, Loki. You know what I mean? Like, it's just full of this kind of immersive fandom that's different than what we had.
Is that what it is now? Is fandom now an intense, concentrated period of obsession that then gets dropped?
Well, maybe, because, I mean, my daughters went through this crazy One Direction period where they spent all their time, you know, going, watching the watching the Twitter feeds, like watching the videos and stuff that they posted, you know, rewatching all the episodes of X Factor that they were on,
mm-hmm.
you know, following blogs, following Tumblr sites that were all One Direction stuff. And then...
Do you think in 20 years they will look back on that fondly and have like some nostalgia in the same way we did? Or do you think they've just burned that circuitry out completely?
No. Of course they'll look back on it fondly. Of course they will.
Well, because they'll associate it with their youth, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But no, I'm just curious. I'm curious what fandom will be in the future. Again, also, since you'll have so much available. Like, you're saying Star Wars movies will come out, but also infinite amount of Star Wars fan stuff will come out, getting a better and better quality online as well, that will then get into that mix, you know.
Everyone take a drink.
Families. Oh, because our sirens are going by.
Families.
Yeah.
we can never do a whole show without sirens, it seems.
Well, you know what? They're off to rescue somebody and save a damn life.
Screw them.
You know,
I think I'm going to put a sneaky dragon light in the fire hall so they know that they can't go.
Have a green light going. Like,
yeah.
In session.
But tell us what the future will be, Patrick. You know. Drink your water first, though. What will water be like in the future?
Can I switch to a different movie entirely that's opening tomorrow?
Okay. After Patrick
my wife
tells
is obsessing
I do,
about?
I do want to say one thing here, because
Patrick's
going to
tell us
what
the future
is,
then yes.
I like exploring this idea because I don't think many people are talking about it, and something very interesting is happening with our culture that hasn't happened before.
Yeah.
And I can't really define it, but it's just there, and I want to spend time. I mean, one day maybe I'll write a book about it or something.
But we'll get to the movie you're talking about. We'll do it, by God.
But, okay. I mean, I'm Christmas shopping this week, and I'm going into Toys R Us, and I have, you know, fond memories of being a kid and going in there, and, you know, the Star Wars toys were one of those big things, like, oh, man, Star Wars came out, and it was all these toys you can collect. And the Star Wars toys exist today in Toys R Us. You can walk in right now. They have the Millennium Falcon. They have the AT-AT. And they're in the classic retro cases that you can buy them for. And I'm trying to think, okay, Star Wars has come out 30 years ago. Imagine you're in 1977 or 1980. Would you walk into Sears toy department and see something, a toy you could buy that was from a 1950 movie?
Yes, you could in a way.
In what?
Well, like famous monsters of movie land. Those sort of
those
things
were around
existed.
For monsters like that existed. But
okay,
not
what
in terms
movie?
Of like,
what movie? Would it be of? Like, let's take your thing.
Sure.
30 years past. So you're going in the 70s? So that's
say 1980. Say 1980.
1980. So we're going back 1950.
Right.
What would be a 1950s? What was the biggest movie in 1950s?
I'm just thinking of,
you know, oddly enough, I'm going to tell you what the biggest thing was. Was sci-fi movies.
Okay.
That was like, you know, monsters and spaceships.
Yeah.
Guess what Star Wars is? It basically is that.
Right,
it's monsters and spaceships.
I know, but there's no toy for,
but it's
like
a new,
there's no toy.
There's no the
for
blob
the thing or the blob.
Yeah.
Or the angry red.
But there wasn't
like
originally.
That.
So you can't go back to what didn't exist. So like in the 50s, if you went into the toy store, you wouldn't find a blob action figure. You wouldn't find a giant ant. You would find maybe flying saucers.
Patrick's right. There wasn't an established nerd culture. I mean, it of the kind that we have now. Like,
well,
in those days,
you're talking nostalgia,
was,
not nerd.
Well, no, but there was. There's still no toys like Flash Gordon or Buck Rogers.
Yeah.
Those things weren't around in 1973 or 1970, where you can go into a toy store and buy those. That's what I'm saying. The franchise, the franchises have now changed. You can have Star Trek, Star Wars.
I don't think they were specifically, but I could definitely get like a laser gun.
Yeah, they were generic.
They were stuff that you would then run outside and play Buck Rogers
and
or Flash Gordon.
You came up with your stories. I agree.
The thing
but
is,
were franchises that were established.
Yeah.
Properties.
And those Star Wars toys aren't for playing with. They're not really toys, right? They're collectibles.
Well, nowadays they're collectibles.
Yeah,
that's
what
I mean.
In the 70s, they were toys.
I know. Yeah. But I'm just talking about now, right? They're no longer toys. So there's nothing that exists like, there's nothing in the 70s that existed like that. There's no one who went into, a toy store and bought a collectible figure of Captain Nemo from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea or whatever. Like, those things.
So something has changed now. Like, kids today, if I was growing up, I would not have the knowledge of that. I was asking what I work with a 24-year-old guy, brilliantly smart dude, but he doesn't care about things from the 1980s at all. And like when I was in the 1980s, I had knowledge of TV shows and things like that. You know, I Love Lucy, all that, the Andy Griffith show that we're watching on television.
Yeah.
He has no concept of Family Ties, you know, Saved by the Bell, Facts of Life, those things.
Wow.
And it's just like,
lucky guy.
Well, I know, but the thing is, that's, if you look at it, if you look at our culture, things are not disappearing. These giant Star Wars, Star Trek franchises, James Bond, aren't disappearing. They're not fading into the background like they did from, you know, the 1920s, 1930s, 1940s movies. They're sticking around. And so I think that's
right to a degree, but you're wrong to a degree. And this, I mean, Walt Disney, as a kid growing up without video, you could go to the theater and see Bambi.
Yes.
You could go and see.
That was an established franchise.
You could go see The Absent-Minded Professor.
Yeah. But the franchise was Disney.
Yeah.
It was kids, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like they would release the movies.
But I'm just
over
saying
over
there are examples of that kind of, you know.
Sure. But it
older
was.
Things
would you
that come
agree that they
the...
were smaller examples or one or two occasions?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it is now.
No, I mean.
Though what you're saying about him not knowing Family Ties, like when you were in this, you know, we grew up in the 90s, right, fellas? Whenever we grew up, there was less stuff to consume. So there was less stuff to remember. There was just less stuff. Like if you're growing up right now, there is so much stuff.
Right,
you couldn't be aware of what happened in the last year in pop culture.
I know, there's tons of stuff.
Whereas if all we'd need to know is like basically five channels and what's on the damn radio, and the radio's playing all the same stuff, you know, all the time. So you obviously lock in. You have room to learn the old stuff as well.
Yeah. I agree. So hang on. Take this idea.
Okay, here comes the big idea, everyone.
Here,
wait for your minds to be blown. Take that hit from
just,
the bong.
Let's just give
now.
A little, we're going to give a little pause because I'm going to add a drum roll. Okay, Patrick. Go.
Okay, so take that idea and what we're talking about, what things are going to be like for people in this new generation looking back in fondness and nostalgia on their memories.
Yeah.
You just said there's so many things out there for them to try and how do you choose from those things? I think what's happening is that you're going to be able to choose like maybe your big tentpole franchises that everybody remembers and takes part with, you know, your Star Wars, your James Bond, your Twilights, your things like that. And then there'll be like one or two things that you remember fondly, but no one else is going to remember at all. But they might have been really popular. Like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I think that's going to fade. It's going to fade to the same level like $6 Million Man will be in 20 years.
Okay.
Because there's nothing coming out.
Here's the thing though with Buffy. Like I have a friend who just recently, I'll say recently, a couple of years ago, got into Angel. And here's how they got into Angel. When I got into Angel, I watched it on the TV, and then maybe we'd buy some DVDs and we'd do that.
Yeah.
He just went, you know, I think I want to watch Angel. Is it on Netflix?
Yeah,
it is.
Boom,
is every episode of Angel on Netflix for no additional cost to me? Ah, fuck it. Let me watch the first one. Ah, let me watch the second one. And then if you've got a slightly obsessive personality, you watch them all the way through unless there's a huge drop in quality. So, yeah, I think like it'll just be random.
But he just watched them all the way through.
Yes.
That's the end for him.
Unless he then...
That's the end. There's nothing else after that.
How do you mean?
There's no Angel after that experience.
He can go and see comic books or novels. But
unless he's, you know, like...
There is actually a lot of that. Yeah, there's a lot of novels. There's a lot of comic books.
There's a lot of comic books. But, I mean, the comics are such a niche now that, you know, it's highly unlikely that people who are watching Netflix are going to go see comic books.
They're just
going to
get mainstream disposable entertainment.
They just want mainstream stuff, right? Like we have to be careful that we don't generalize our attitude over the population, because we are specific types of nerdy people who are obsessive collector types, who, you know, have a particular kind of nostalgia, who have a particular view. Like, most people aren't like that. Mm-hmm. Like, they could watch all of Buffy and then it's done. Then you'll see their collection of Buffy DVDs that they bought in Valley Village.
Yeah.
You know?
Or again, the DVDs don't exist anymore.
Or the DVDs don't, or they watch it on Netflix and they just erase it out of their queue or whatever you do with Netflix.
You don't do anything. You just watch them.
But you know what I'm saying, right?
Dave doesn't have Netflix.
I don't have Netflix.
Yeah. Are those really the same type of fans that existed in the 70s and the 80s?
I had a friend come from England and he brought his annuals with him. In England, when you were kids in the 70s, you got annuals, which were like collections of all these great moments of a show. So I had all these Blake 7 annuals. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at Blake 7. I knew Doctor Who. I knew of Doctor Who. And I looked at these and thought, this looks really great. Now, I'm going to obsess about this for the next 10 years until I finally get to see the show on television. I'm going to be thinking about this. I'm going to be looking for it. I'm going to be, you know, it's always going to be there. You know, this guy didn't have that with Angel. Mm-hmm. He heard about Angel, went to Netflix, watched the whole thing, watched them all in one giant thing, and then...
You know what that is? You know what that is? Actually, I think I can name the thing. I think I can name it. It's the unwrapped Christmas present. That's what it is. No, seriously. Mm-hmm. It's like this thing that you have and you shake it and you play with it.
Yeah.
But with Blake 7, it's wondering about that universe. I haven't lived it. I've just heard the story and it becomes this mystical thing. And there was a search to find it. And when you actually came across that bootleg VHS and you watched it, it was like, wow, now I watched this thing. Or you discovered that there was a book that was made by somebody else.
Yeah.
That type of thing is disappearing.
Because you don't need it. Because it's constantly available.
It's a good and bad thing.
It is. Well, here's where it now crosses over to. It goes even farther. One, like I used to love MASH. So I'd record MASH with a tape recorder, you know, and I'd be able to listen to it. And it's like, oh, when I want it, it's there for me. Or then it became, I'm going to videotape all the shows I like, because then when I want them, they'll be there for me. Now I know if I want to watch Buffy, it's there for me anyway. Someone's taking care of it. I don't have any stress, which means I can watch Buffy anytime.
So in a way, reduces the show.
I don't know if it does. But then let's take it one extra step. There's a bit of you goes, I love Batman. I need a Batman action figure. And you're like, oh, I better get that Batman action figure because it might be sold out later and I want it. Now that you got 3D printers coming up and I could print up a Batman action figure any damn time I want, there's not even any reason to have that.
Yeah.
You know, there's not even that collector's mentality of I want to get this thing. That's going to disappear as well, you know? And I think where the obsession's going to go is it's going to go to what's next. So you watch Buffy, what's next? Angel, what's next?
Nothing.
Dollhouse, what's next?
Nothing.
Avengers, Joss Whedon's gone on to do this. What's next?
But
oh, there's all these Buffy novels and this kind of thing. What's next? Well, you know, Joss Whedon says he was influenced by this person. Oh, what's next? And go on from there and go on from there. I think that's the way the OCD will transfer.
I disagree a little bit.
That's sort of how my OCD transfers.
Because, but everything you're talking about there are different things. Like, what's next isn't what it is. It's how do I immerse myself in it? So that's what fan fiction is. And
you don't need
fiction.
To immerse. You those immerse. Are... No, you don't immerse anymore because you immerse when you think it's going to go away.
See,
you hoard gold when there's no gold.
I can tell you don't have children.
Okay, but you hoard gold when gold is rare. You don't need to be Scrooge McDuck when anytime you want gold, you can have gold. Like when you're a kid.
People hoard stuff that isn't even rare.
But when you're a kid, it's a different. You live in a different world than you do when you're an adult. If you're an adult and you know that you can access something anytime that you want instantly, it becomes less valuable to you. You might still like it, but you don't feel, I've got to have that next to me all the time. And you don't have that collector's mentality because there's no reason to have that collector's mentality anymore.
That's why Buffy will disappear.
It's not going to disappear.
No. Actually, Patrick doesn't mean it's going to disappear. Yeah. It's going to be on Netflix. Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's going to be available. But what he means is that it won't be an obsessing thing. It won't have this sort of.
Okay, so with Star Wars, and that's the thing that stands out to me, and I think it's for a lot of people, it stands out with these type of, you know, our age group. With Star Wars, you get to see the movie, then you want to go back to see the movie. You don't have the experience of VHS or being able to watch it on Netflix at the time. Mm-hmm. So you are, I agree with you, Ian, is that you're hoarding. But what you're hoarding is that memory, that emotional impact you had of the Star Wars universe, and then using your imagination to fill it out. That's why when you got the AT-AT, or you got the new Stormtrooper, or you got the Land Speeder, and you played in those worlds, it was something possessive. It was something that I remember feeling, I want this thing, I want to have it, I'm cool because I have it. And if another kid had that new Stormtrooper thing, now they're cool and I got to go over to their house and play with it and things like that, right?
And it's hard to get that thing.
Right, but that's going away. That's what I'm saying is that, okay, I just saw Star Wars, now I can download it on a movie if I really want to see it, or experience it at another show, or watch it on Netflix, or go to the next thing. And they won't have that collector's attitude like, I need to hoard, I need to have
this. Do you know what it really is? It's winning the fucking lottery. It's like, if you're someone who's poor and, you know, everything is precious to you. When you win the lottery, you're like, oh, I can finally get that car I want. But once you've gotten that car, I could get another car and it's not the same value that you place on that car. Mm-hmm. We're now fucking rich.
Yeah.
Like, how many DVDs do I have? Infinite fucking DVDs. Yeah. I go to Netflix at night and go, I can watch tens of thousands of movies. Yeah. I'm this fucking rich.
Ian's been listening to a lot of episodes of The Nerdist.
No, he's absolutely, I agree with that 100%. Imagine if you had a time machine and you could take the 40-year-old you right now and travel 30 years in the past, and it's Christmas 1980, and you bring your iPhone with you and go, holy fuck, here's the next 30 years of what you can see. And you realize, not only is Empire Strikes Back coming up, but there's Return of the Jedi and there are three other movies and blah, 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 and just
You'd actually just have a brick in your hand if you brought an iPhone back to 1980. Look at all the stuff you can... Wait, I can't. The connection.
No, I left some games on it.
It would all be downloaded on there.
You prepare.
And now it's not like you're looking for Wi-Fi. I thought this out. I know exactly what's going to happen.
And now with 3D printers, you know, they've got 3D printers that build houses now. They build fucking houses.
Yeah, it
you
is know, the it's fucking just, replicator. It's one step away from the replicator from Star Trek.
I was just reading online, like, basically Microsoft's working on a holodeck right now. They're working on that. That's a projector that just, like, shines stuff on all your walls and boom, there you go. But what I'm saying with the 3D printer is really going to change things because you can't even then want to hoard objects anymore. Like, admittedly, you can't make a fucking diamond. I get that. But, like, if you want a thing, like, oh, geez, I want something for the kitchen. What do you want? I want this knife. Boom. Okay, boom, done. What do you want? I want this action figure. Boom. Yeah, you can make it sharp enough to cut whatever the hell you want. Yeah. You could. It just depends the materials that you make it out of. That technology is now there to make objects. So now objects are off the table. So all of a sudden, we're the richest people that have ever lived. Yeah. Like, we have more access to things than anyone. The richest man in history did not have as much access to things as us.
Yeah.
You know? Even like, hey, the guy has a harem. Really? I've got access to all the pornography in the world, more than I could ever watch. Yeah. I used to have to go to the woods and hopefully find some of this. We are
seriously,
so goddamn
seriously
rich.
Though, the harem's better.
Maybe it is. But we're going through millionaire syndrome. We've won the damn lottery, and now we've got to adjust to that.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on this.
Fives all around. High fives. Not today. Back and forth. Patrick and me, high fives.
But
I'm going to print up a high five. I'm going to high five that high five.
Standing back from us and listening to us talk.
If you stand back, you're outside the window and you fall to the street, David.
Metaphorically standing back from us.
Very good.
Is what we're talking about is so unimportant. And for Ian to say we are the richest people in the world because we can make a knife with a printer This seems kind of sad, actually.
Well, we're also the richest people in the world, and that we live in the most peaceful time ever. So we're the richest people, period. We are the richest people for food. We are the rich. We are the best time to be a woman. We are the best time to be gay. We are the best time for human rights. We're the best time for the least amount of slavery in the world.
Yeah. Okay. Those are important things. Those
we're
are
the best
things.
Time for and the rest
the
of it is just human nature.
The fact that you can make
nature.
Star Wars figures with a 3D printer doesn't seem
quite as
rich.
Yeah, but that spins off from it. Though.
Yeah.
It
does, well, people that win the lottery aren't having the happiest days ever. That I'm just saying that we've got the lottery syndrome in that we're wealthier than anyone ever in history ever. And we also live in the best time in history ever. And that's weird. That's a weird
thing
to
adjust to.
It's weird
because if having a 3D printer or if having Netflix devalues things, then does being the richest person in history,
well,
does that devalue things
value
too?
Value is what you put on something. If you have, if you've got $1 million and then you've got $1 billion, mm-hmm. Okay. The person who has $1 million can feel wealthier than the billionaire if they put value on what they have. If you value the home that you have, then it's the best thing in the world. Or you can have the bigger home and it's worth less to you because it's just worth less to you because fuck it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all your perspective. Value is what you place on something. I'm just saying we have more access to all of these things. And that to me is what traditional wealth is. You know, what can you purchase for X amount of thing? Well, for free, you can get fucking all of this. Mm-hmm. And that's just constantly expanding and it's going to expand way more.
Enjoy it while it lasts, everyone.
Well, you can.
It's a finite thing.
What's finite?
Wealth.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
No, it's not. That's just math. You can have infinite amount of money.
No, you cannot, Ian.
You
cannot
have
infinite amount of money.
Of course you can.
Well, hang on. Wait a second, though. I mean, look at all the movies you have in your house right now, mm-hmm. all these DVDs that Ian was talking about, right? If you were the same age you were 30 years ago, you would not have these movies in your house. Mm-hmm. So that is a type of wealth. It's just informational wealth. It's entertainment wealth, right?
Oh, I'm not saying that we're not wealthy. I'm just saying that let's enjoy it while it lasts.
What's that mean?
Because it's a finite thing.
Are you talking about the Mayan apocalypse happening tomorrow?
No. I'm just talking about everything that you have in your life is a finite. It's a finite thing.
It's really not.
So let's enjoy
it.
If
what you've got in your life is the internet, the internet isn't finite.
The internet is finite.
Is exponentially growing.
It's exponentially growing, but it also has a cost to it, right? And not just a intellectual cost, but it has an environmental cost.
What's the environmental cost?
Oh, you're talking about Malthusian values, where eventually things are going to run out.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, not necessarily, but just things like, you know, like the Dales in Oregon, right? That's where the Google, the cooling plants are.
Right.
Where they have heated up the river and destroying the fish.
Okay.
So just things like that, that you don't think about while you're using the computer.
No, we should be environmental.
Those things should be environmentally
sensible.
So things have a finite element to them. The fact that we can enjoy things for cheap now, mm-hmm. because we buy them cheap from a place where people get paid very little, won't always be that. That situation won't always exist.
Do you think there's a
so
finite...
let's enjoy that while it lasts.
Do you think there's a finite amount of knowledge in the world?
Yes.
Well, I do believe that's incorrect. Then we're going to really disagree on that. There's
Why?
Not a finite amount. There's always going to be something more. Just by the fact that like a second has passed, more has happened. There's more to learn. More things
but
have interacted with each other.
Not necessarily more to learn. It's just more of the same things that we're experiencing.
No, the universe doesn't go as like the same things happen all over again or we'd be frozen solid. Things change constantly. And so, of course, there's more to learn. More people are born. Okay. They have different ideas than have come out before. They've interacted in different ways.
Okay.
And the universe itself is changing constantly. So, of course, there's infinite amount of things to learn. Now to the movie that your wife wanted to talk about.
The universe,
let us know what you think, everybody. Is knowledge
infinite?
Is knowledge finite?
The universe is infinite. We are finite.
I think
we are the universe.
We are not
part of it.
Ian.
Yes, we are. We're not separate from the universe. You were part of the Big Bang. You'll be part of the Big Crunch. You'll be there later.
You are finite.
Well,
you will not exist after a certain time, right?
No, I've been around since the beginning of time. So have you. Of course you have. And you'll be around to the end of time. Matter can't be created or destroyed.
But you're just talking about yourself as matter.
That's
I'm talking
like
about you, your personality, like you as a person. You are finite.
I'm different now than I was when I was a baby. I'm different than I was in the womb. I'm
yes,
different than I will be. I'm in
all
7 years, my whole body will regenerate.
Yeah, all your
and
atoms
I'll be a
in your body
person.
Are different. I know that.
Okay.
I know that all your atoms are different. But
yes.
I'm just saying that your personality will no longer exist. You are finite. Your existence is finite.
Well, it depends if you believe that's fine. That's great. You don't know everything. You
no,
can't.
You don't. I know that.
But you're putting a pretty
knowledge is finite.
I think any
Jeez, you got to see this motherfucking movie. It opens up everything. Everything. You question everything about Dave's, who you are as a person, the existence of the universe, whether you're finite or infinite, and you start thinking about, you're re-examining your life about what do I do with the time machine to travel back to 1980 and show the kids Star Wars movies that don't exist.
What movie is this?
This is the movie where if you have to drive over 80 miles an hour or you blow up, but if you drive 88, you go back in time and have to fuck your mom.
Ooh.
All right. So what's this movie that your wife likes? Because we got
to
get
to that. Yeah, we're getting
We're talking about reality and the finance.
It went very cool. I liked it. Yeah. I liked it very much.
Let's just agree that the only infinite thing is the amount of Hobbit movies. Like, it's just going to go forever. It's going to be like, they say it's 3, but it's going to be 4. It's going to be 5.
Okay.
All right. What's this movie?
The movie my wife is totally looking forward to is called, I think it was supposed to be called Reacher. I think it's called Jack Reacher.
It's called
Jack Reacher.
Oh, Jack Reacher, yeah. Jack Reacher. Because people wouldn't know what Reacher was, you know, because I don't know why. They have to add the Jack to it.
So. Jack Reacher sounds way too sexual.
Yeah, but it's not even that. It's not even that. Mm-hmm. It's like, does your wife know?
She loves the books. She's read all the books.
Okay, good. Okay, yeah. So she knows it comes from another franchise. Yeah. And Lee Child wrote the book. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And apparently the guy is 7 feet tall, but it's played by Tom Cruise.
Yeah, he's 200 pounds. He's blonde.
Yeah, the dude that played Sabretooth in the first X-Men movie is essentially that guy from the books.
Yeah.
So somehow Hollywood said, yeah, Tom Cruise, you come on up. That's it. But he's a producer and
you can't. I mean, it's a new franchise.
Yes, they're hopefully a franchise, just like Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins, was a franchise, and you can't get that on Netflix either.
But Remo Williams made the mistake of not having Tom Cruise or not having the equivalent of Tom Cruise as the main. You know, they had some guy who played Remo Williams,
Fred Williams, Fred Ward.
But
Fred
who
Ward.
Is he?
Fred Ward from Wonder Years?
No,
it was Fred Savage, wasn't it?
Fred Savage.
Oh, sorry.
Go away.
I think you're thinking of Burt Ward, who played Robin in this.
Infinite knowledge, my ass. Infinite stupidity.
Hey, stupidity is part of knowledge, bro. It's all part of, it's yin and yang, brother.
We all have our mythical narratives.
Oh my God, you don't know who played that? Oh my God.
I know the poster. Yeah, I could redraw the poster for you right now.
Okay.
The adventure continues. Meaning it's infinite.
No, stop right there. Who played the love interest for Fred Ward in Remo Williams?
Oh, that was Fred Savage.
Serena Williams.
No. Kate Mulgrew from Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, that's great.
I know. Like
Mrs. Columbo is the...
I know. People always go, really?
So was she the big draw? Like, is that film...
No, she wasn't.
See, I mean, that's what they've done with Reacher, right? Is they've taken an established...
Yes.
You know... Big time superstar to carry this
fictional
franchise.
Yeah,
to carry this franchise.
Well, yeah.
Okay. And I mean, really, like, you know, my wife has spent like the last 2 months spluttering about this film.
Okay.
So
positively?
There's lots of very, very.
Spluttering in a lovely way, did you say?
Yeah, and positively? It's like.
No. It's just kind of like, how could.
Yeah, she's
Tom Cruise. Blink
the she's not alone. There's lots of people like
that. Well,
this
is similar. Like Dave has a daughter who felt the same way about a movie called Ella Enchanted.
Yeah, she loved the book by Gail Carson Levine. Just loved the book.
Okay.
And your daughter's 8?
Yeah.
She would love that book.
Okay.
Ella Enchanted.
Okay. I know.
Don't let her see the movie.
Okay.
Let her read the book.
But a very different.
Very different movie.
So this has been the type of thing that's gone on in the Dedrick household.
We've all had our spluttering moments. The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Reacher. But yeah, so like...
She's Tom Bombadil!
She's watching the trailer, and it shows him driving.
Yeah.
Oh, she was so mad because Reacher doesn't drive. Reacher does not.
Absolutely.
He doesn't even know how to drive.
How does Reacher get around in the books?
He just gets hitchhikes.
Hitchhikes.
I haven't read the books, but I've learned about this.
He has a house. Sometimes he gets a house, but he doesn't actually live in his house. It was given to him by someone. He has an ATM card, a toothbrush, and the clothes on his back.
Because the poster says, like, own nothing, have nothing, mm-hmm. carry nothing.
They're trying to say, we're sorry we offended you if you're a hardcore fan. Just come and see it.
Give us a chance.
They're doing anything for that opening weekend. Mm-hmm. They want to minimize. They want to minimize the vocal. This is... I'm trying to give you an analogy. Remember when Cruise was cast as Lestat in...
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And everybody was like, what the hell? You know, people who read them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The same thing for the Lee Child books for Jack Reacher.
Yeah, it's just been that kind of total internet outrage. But I said to Lisa, you know, what? You know, someone like Tom Cruise can play big, though.
He can act when he's pushed.
Yeah, and he... So He can bring it like, there's a film, no one really liked it very much, but it was called Night and Day. It had Cameron Diaz in it.
Okay.
And
so that's on Netflix. That, I keep thinking I might see it, but I don't.
Go what were you going to say, sorry?
Yeah. I haven't seen it.
Actually, I really enjoyed it.
Oh, all right. I'll click on Netflix and watch it for free tonight.
It's a spy kind of caper film and stuff like that. But Tom Cruise is really, really, really good in it. And he handles, for some reason, he can play that kind of competent person really well. Do you know what I mean? In a film, whether he's in the Mission Impossible movies, he can just sort
of... Good job in those.
Yeah, he can just sort of live in that kind of character. And that's what Reacher is too. And I keep saying to her, you know what, give it a chance. She wants to go see it tomorrow. That's why we're going to be late.
I keep thinking that it looks like Rockford Files to me when I see it. Like it feels like...
Well, I love the Rockford Files.
I love Rockford Files too, but that's what it feels like to me. It feels like, you know, the guy is like... All right, I don't want to be here. You want to be here? I don't want to fight you, but are we fighting? Oh, I'm crying out loud. Okay, we'll have to fight.
There was a screening for it last night. I didn't go because I was just getting over feeling sick.
And Were you invited, though?
Yes, I was.
Oh,
I did.
Well, you
did
should
not
be.
Do it.
Well,
that must did
be
not
nice.
Do it.
All
did
right.
not do it, though. But I wanted to go see it because I have heard of the controversy, mm-hmm. and I haven't read the books, and the people are very passionate about the books.
No, I haven't read them either, so I would be coming at it from a totally different view than her.
Yeah, yeah, and I have that. I want to approach it as a film first.
Yeah,
and, you know.
Yeah.
Well, if it makes sense.
I'm kind of the same because I know that she loves it, so she's coming at all the books and loves them, and she buys them like as soon as they come out. They're in her pocket, in her lap, reading. And I haven't read any of them. And so it'll be kind of fun for the two of us to see it and come from these two different views, you know.
Have you ever watched movies with someone who is a big fan of the book and just can't stand the movie? Like just grinding their teeth through the whole damn movie?
I think everybody's encountered that now.
One of the most, it was an ex of mine and she's a big fan of V.I. Wachowski and watched the Wachowski movie Kathleen Turner.
Yeah, tried to do
and
that
oh, like I couldn't hear it for the grind, grind, grind. Just like, oh, no, no.
Hollywood,
no.
See, Hollywood tries to do this. There are these very popular series of books. Denzel Washington was in about 10 years ago on Devil in a Blue Dress, and there was a whole series of books about that detective as well. And then Tom Clancy and the Jack.
That's a really good movie, by the way, The Devil in the Blue Dress.
I haven't seen it, but they have they buy the rights to these books, and then they try for a decade or two to try and make it. Like I've known about the Jack Reacher books, One Shot, and all these other ones, and they tried to amalgamate books and they get different directors on board and they leave and go away. And I think the problem with that particular franchise where they're trying to do something that's so character dependent is that they're looking for the right package. They're looking for the right star at the right moment in their career. Like 5 years ago, Tom Cruise would not have considered doing this. Not at all. Because Tom Cruise has only done one sequel, and that's Mission Impossible. That's the only thing he's done because he owns that. He is a producer on that. Mm-hmm. He makes money from it, and he was smart and as a businessman said, look, I have my career. This is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to do Top Gun 2, so on and so forth. Things have changed for his career now, so he's had to change some things around, right?
He went cuckoo.
Well,
he went cuckoo bananas in public.
He did.
Kind of tarnished his reputation. The whole Katie thing.
Katie Holmes. But I mean, everything can be taken out. I think we're all cuckoo in some way, and some of us are more cuckoo than other ones. And I don't know anything about Tom Cruise and other
people. I'm just saying that he went.
That I'm going to mention here on air.
He does save a lot of people.
He did.
Like from like Superman style. Like he just runs in there and grabs a baby out of a boat.
Yeah.
Even though the baby isn't drowning.
I'm not putting him down. I'm just saying that in public, he said things that were.
His career got.
Yeah.
Blew
he kind of derailed. He kind of derailed. Yeah, his reputation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then the thing with Brooke Shields and Scientology and psychology. Absolutely. And he's had to rebuild his career over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And this is part of the marketing to do that. It is something that, you know, I mean.
Also, he's older. So he's
50 now.
Yeah. He's on the downside of his career as an action hero, as that kind of leading man character.
Yes, but things have changed too, because when you were 50 a generation ago, you were Charlton Heston in those movies. Now, he still pretty much looks like he did 15 years ago. I mean, there's a little bit more lines, but
pull it off. Like
there's not one gray hair in his head. Arnold Schwarzenegger is doing three movies coming out next year after 4 years not doing anything. Right?
Yeah.
One of the movie roles, he actually has gray hair. And the other two roles, he doesn't. There's not one wet lock of gray hair at all, right? And this guy is, what, 63?
Well, they have
They're extending. They're extending their
When they give the movie stars that, like the older guys, like your John Travolta's, when they give them the hair dye, does anyone just go like, you know what, let's just make it a little more natural? Or do they just go,
it looks terrible.
As black as Satan's asshole.
I was watching this film.
Yeah, but John's got no hair up there at all. That's a whole wig.
I know, but fuck. Look at the CGI in The Hobbit. Fix that shit. shit, man. No just add it later.
I got no problem with people dyeing their hair. I dyed my hair.
No,
too.
I dye my hair too.
I don't care about that.
But like, not super jet black.
No, yeah. Like Harrison Ford does a pretty good job of his hair. I think that's pretty good. I mean, he's like what 70 now, but he can do it, and it's not.
But you do the bad Grecian formula, all of a sudden it's black in a week, looks, and you're like, no one even notices, don't they?
I was watching Tom Hanks and Larry Crown. A half a year ago or so, and that's the same thing. Yeah, he's a man in his 60s, I guess, now.
No, 50s.
Late 50s, I guess?
55.
Oh, really? 50. He looks a bit older, like, I don't know.
55, 56, somewhere like that.
Okay, well, the problem is he looks older because his hair is black.
Yeah.
So his face looks old, and his hair looks
Your face goes all paley.
So it's kind of a weird effect,
It doesn't look normal at all, I know.
Not appealing
at all. And he had weird hair in that first Da Vinci movie. It didn't look right at all.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand the reason for that.
Yeah, I could not watch that. I said, I can't do it because of the hair.
And then I couldn't watch the second one because too much burning people alive. And I'm like, do I need this? No.
But the hair was better in the second.
It was. I had to go that. And then they started burning people alive. And I'm like, well, this movie ain't for me.
It was the first movie that made me realize that knowledge is finite.
You know what else is finite,
cheap
Dave?
Cheap shot.
This show.
This show is
this
finite.
This show.
So you're saying that we're done?
I believe we are.
Okay.
I think so. We're about like 1 minute 20 in.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get this guy to go to a little dinner and have a little chit chat.
I got away with one piece of gossip. See that? We just talked and we went off.
I know. We didn't act too much.
Listen, we don't normally tangent like this.
Yeah.
We don't normally bare our souls. This is what we do every fucking week. We do a little like yip yap. We do a little, we're going to talk about this. Then we go off. We reveal some things about ourselves.
I'm a good instigator. See? I'm a good instigator.
Well, we're going to have you back on the show. This is why you were our first return guest. Not like those other pricks. Let me just say, everyone else who's been on a guest on this show, an asshole. Every single one of them. You know who I'm talking about, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You say worse things than I do.
You're talking about me, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm talking about you.
Okay.
No, Dave, that's not true.
Do you have anything to plug?
Do you know what's infinite, Dave? Love.
Love is infinite.
My compassion for you.
Yes.
Let yourself be beautiful.
I think you guys should
power of love, a voice from
don't worry, I can edit this, Patrick.
No, it's fine. I think you guys should plug what you're doing. What are you doing recently, Ian? What do you got coming out?
What do you got coming up, Ian?
Just had a thing come out in the Irrelevant Show. Was an all superhero episode of the Irrelevant Show, web only. Mostly my sketches, also sketches on there from Neil Gran and Diana Francis, who I used to do Canadian content with. We're bringing Sideswipe back. We're moving locations. We're going
and
to
where's
the,
that
going to
be?
That's going to be at the Storm Crow Tavern here in Vancouver. Which, if you haven't been to the Storm Crow Tavern and you like, say you like your dungeons, but you also enjoy your dragons, this is where you go.
What if I had a hankering for a game?
So well,
like
also,
Game of Thrones.
You like a Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Oh, so you like Dungeons and Dragons? I've already covered that, haven't I?
No, I meant like washrooms. Throne, washroom, game. No.
Okay. That actually would be a great name for the washrooms,
yeah,
eh? The Game of Thrones.
That.
And then you don't say which is male and which is female. And that's the Game of Thrones.
Yeah. You enter and you die.
Oh, winter's coming. Well, anyway, it's kind of a D&D style tavern. And so we're going to be going and doing our improv game thing there.
What day is that?
That's going to be on, I believe, Tuesday, January 15th.
Okay.
And also, Titmouse is coming back soon. I'll tell you more about that as things progress. New Simpsons out this week that I wrote. New Simpsons Super Spectacular that I wrote. New Futurama that I wrote with the help of James Lloyd, who is right across the hall from us right now.
Seething over all the drawing he had to do for those.
All right. Patrick, anything coming up for you?
I got... you know what?
Oh, my life.
You know what?
My life.
I'm still writing my site. I don't have enough hours in the day for which I could put together. CoronaComingAttractions.com if you want to check it out for movie commentary and things like that. I am putting together some ideas for 2013 where I can actually do some more creative adventures so I can feel I've accomplished something a year from now. So I'm trying to put together a couple of ideas. So hopefully by the next time I'm on the show, I'll be more further along and I can mention what those are.
I'm trying to do that same thing too. I don't know whether to bring those up or not.
You just took 5 minutes to talk about all the cool stuff you're doing.
That's in the past that I did like 7 months ago.
Because it's now. It's now, man. It's cool stuff now.
Well, okay.
You're very humble. Don't
I don't
humble.
Think I am.
Yeah.
I don't think
He thinks he's the universe. I don't think he's that humble.
I'm doing it next to a wall full of my wife's trophies, so this is how I stay humble.
Well, the shadow is very
cool. The shadow of the Spike Awards just like comes down on
Why are the Eisners beneath the spikes? I mean, okay, besides the fact the spikes are taller.
That's right. They wouldn't fit on the shelf. Also, when there's an earthquake, we want those sharp. They look like what you'd stab a vampire with. We want the metal sharp things to just fall on people and kill them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm sure we'll be able to sue Spike TV.
Who wouldn't want that?
Yeah. Stripperella, we didn't really get a chance to enjoy you on Spike TV. David, well, how's things? Oh, by the way, David, any plans for Christmas? Anything you're doing special for Christmas?
Panicking.
Really?
Yes, I'm in a blind panic right now.
Oh, okay.
I've been so busy. I've been insanely busy, so I really feel like Christmas has got away from me this year.
You know what? Take a breath.
And I love Christmas.
You know what, though?
In a completely sexual way, I love Christmas.
Do you put the ho in the ho?
I put the ho.
When Dave sings, "Oh come all ye faithful,"
I like to fill the stockings with care.
The next line is "On your face."
I like
jingle
I like
bells,
the frosting.
Jingle bells, yes. Jingle them all the way.
Jingle them all the way. I put the frosting on the tree.
You put the frosting on the tree.
That's all I'm. I'm not going to go into
on the tree.
Detail. Yep.
Okay, that doesn't make any sense. That's not even a double entendre. That's a half an entendre. Because it wouldn't even work as the first thing.
It's called a double surreal entendre, Ian. I don't know if you've ever heard of that
double,
before.
Double surreal entendre sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, hello, Dolly. Well,
everybody.
I wish you a Merry Christmas,
oh, yeah,
Patrick.
That,
I wish you a Happy New Year. I wish you a Merry Christmas, David.
Thank you.
Happy
you
New
too.
Year.
Merry Christmas.
I wish everyone out there a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, whatever you're celebrating. Don't get too bummed out. I know it gets dark. It's fucking hard. I'm glad. If you're listening to this, it means the Mayans were wrong. Fuck you, Mayans.
Yes. I think we're pretty much all thinking that, not that they were wrong, because I don't think the Mayans are wrong.
Do you know what they were
Why
wrong
are we
about?
Blaming
they
the
thought
Mayans?
That life was finite. That was their problem.
It's not even the Mayans.
Oh, he got that other lob over the neck.
It's not even the the thing I just want to stick it for the Mayans. Because it's not the Mayans who said the world was going to end. It's idiots from nowadays.
Aztecs?
Who have taken... Yeah, the Aztecs. The Aztecs spread a lot of stuff around about the...
They make a good
chocolate.
They're
always dissing the Mayans.
They make a good chocolate. Dissing,
weren't the Mayans after the Aztecs?
Look, dude,
they were next door to the Tic Tacs.
And on that note...
And the Paddy Wax, give a dog a bone.
You guys.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks for being on, Patrick. Happy holidays and Christmas and everyone.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Happy birthday to you.
And we'll be back. We'll be back for New Year's.
Happy birthday, dear Jesus. Happy birthday to you.
And many more.
Obviously.
Mayans.